Estás escuchando Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
As the Quietude says, there's intensity and then there's Lord Spyheart. He plays one of the more visceral, extreme, brutal live acts I've ever seen, and now he's on his own. Welcome to the RPS studio, Martin Kanta, a.k.a. Lord Spyheart.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Yeah.
First of all, congratulations for your debut album, your debut solo album.
Thank you.
The Adept.
Yeah.
I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I think that people worldwide are pretty, like, enjoying it too.
Yeah.
I've read quite a few good reviews of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let me explain me this, because you say that it's a very loving, positive, uplifting record. And I mean, I really like it. I enjoy this kind of music.
Yeah.
And for me, it's dark, terrifying, it's aggressive. Sounds like the soundtrack for Doomsday.
Yeah, it does. But actually, that's like the contrast in the music I make. Like, because you find that the main themes and the messages I have in the music are very positive messages for, you know, like uplifting people. You know, these messages about overcoming oppression, you know, being self-actualized, being happy, also a lot of spirituality in it, tapping into your own potential and like achieving all of your, you know, goals and being successful and everything like that. So it's like normally, you know, culture in Africa where I come from, normally you find that some of the most medicinal plants, they look very hardcore, like they have spikes and like they have a lot of thorns, but they're very medicinal in quality. Mm-hmm. So it kind of translated in my music because it has like this dark and heavy exterior, but it's very soft inside and very loving and very kind and also very welcoming. Like also at the shows, like it's the same energy, like it's all love, yeah, completely, yeah, you know, transcendent and like very like inclusive. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In this album, in this, The Adept, there's extreme metal, death metal growls, trap beats, gabber drums, industrial noises, guitar reds.
Yeah.
How do you manage to mix all of this in just one album?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I would say it's my my vision as an artist, you know, because I listen to a lot of music and also I'm always willing to push it to the next level. And like, you know, this album was mostly dedicated to my great grandmother who was involved in the struggle for independence in Kenya, Field Marshal Muthoni, during the Mau Mau British occupation in the 50s and the 60s. So, they looked very hardcore when they were doing this, the fighting and all that to get the independence, but they were very loving people, very caring for the country and the community. So for me, having that kind of concept, and also like I listen to a lot of, you know, like all these sorts of genres. I listen to a lot of trance, trap, I listen to a lot of metal at the same time, electronic music. Like it's just kind of bleeds into the music I make because I'm always trying to like absorb influences and like, you know, regurgitate them into my music. Like, you know, something like I really like it's sick. Like I can even see how it'll be at the shows, you know, like it just kind of just happens to come into the music I make because I'm always surrounded by different producers and I always like, you know, getting out of my comfort zone to what I'm used to doing. And also so I can keep growing and keep evolving. So yeah, it's totally like simple for me and very like natural for me and organic to have all these like different sounds and like influences in my music to make this other weird, other genre, like that's not really there out there yet. But yeah, it's the familiar and unfamiliar at the same time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about your great grandmother. She sounds like a remarkable woman. Did you get to meet her? Or?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, when I was smaller. Yeah, but when I grew up a bit, yeah, I kind of got into all this touring and stuff. Yeah, so I did. Yeah.
But tell us about her. So, as you mentioned, she was the only female field marshal in the Mau Mau movement.
Yes.
Yeah. How did that happen? I mean, just.
Yeah. Actually, it was because she was she grew up like. Working on this British settler farm, they were picking pyrethrum, and she saw how people were being mistreated and people were being oppressed and they were being tortured and treated like animals. And for her, that was not like that when they were growing up. They wished to play everywhere in the fields. Everywhere was just open. Now they had to follow these rules and their life completely turned upside down. So, and one day she like protested something that had happened on the farm against the people who were running it. And she was almost beaten to death. So that's when she decided like, you know, I'm just going to just leave all this and like, you know, try to figure out a solution to liberate our people. So that's when she decided to get into the Mau Mau and to help them. And in the beginning, she was just only helping with the, you know, information, like getting information for the Mau Mau, like where they can, like, they'll be safe, also like how they will conduct the strategies and everything, because he was very good at strategies and protocol. And also he will like also help deliver food to them in the forest. So they will collect food with the women and then they will leave them in some parts of the forest. So that began very early in her life, because she just decided, like, she became like that after she was almost killed when she was being beaten. She was very young. She decided, like, she can't allow this to happen anymore, because it was her land and it was her people. And it didn't make any sense that this kind of evil is there and, like, people are really suffering and everything. So for her, it only made sense because nobody was actually doing it at the time. They were all obeying and, like, you know, falling into line. But she found that already the Mau Mau had come together, and there were this group of people who wanted to break that and to bring the attention to how wrong it is and the atrocities that are happening and all these people who are dying at the same time. So that really inspired her to, like, you know, be involved with it. And she gave up all her life to it, and yeah, till she was old, yeah, in the 90s. So yeah.
I've read that sadly she passed away pretty recently.
Yeah.
Did she ever get to listen to your music?
Oh, yeah. No, not really. But yeah, because these last few years of her life, I really wanted to go to visit her. Actually, we were talking with my wife. We were supposed actually to do like this family portrait with her next to me. Like, it would be the album artwork. Like, but we got so busy also with COVID happened. And like, I didn't go back to Kenya for a couple of years because we were always on the road and touring the US, you touring the European side and festivals and stuff. So I didn't really get to see her towards this other end of her life, because that's when my music took off and everything. But yeah, I would love if she would listen to it. Yeah,
and sure. I've read that your mother runs a church.
Yes.
How does she cope with the fact that the kind of music you make,
yeah,
it's usually associated with the evil, with Satan?
Yeah.
How do you cope with that?
Oh yeah, she knows me and like she understands me, because she has been with me throughout this journey, even before I started doing music. And she always advised me, because she was telling me like I have all these special gifts and I'm very creative and I'm very imaginative at the same time. She always told me like I should not, like, you know, work like a normal person. I should do ministry for God. So like I told her like my way of doing that is through music and through shows and performing and making albums and, you know, shooting videos and films. So she always encouraged me to do what I feel in my heart is my life's purpose to achieve. And she told me, like, all these things are not mine. They're God-given gifts, and, like, I should utilize them on earth and to also, like, inspire other people around the world to be like me. So for her, it's totally cool. And, like, she understands, because I'm not insulting the, you know, the establishment or anything. It's just like really mostly psychological, spiritual things I talk about, and about wealth and success and, like, you know, self-actualization and self-realization and manifestation of dreams and, you know, more potential, tapping into your potential and everything. So it's very positive things I talk about, and how the human can realize their gifts and their place in the world and follow their purpose and meaning. So for her, it's all good as long as I'm happy. Also, I'm not in any trouble, and I'm traveling a lot. So, like, I was always the first person in my family to go to different places and everything. So she's a big supporter of mine. And my sister and my bro always send her pictures and videos. And she can't believe it. Like, it's just, wow, it's the last one kid doing all this. So, yeah, she's very happy about it. Yeah.
Going back to the adept, despite having worked with Nyege Nyege or Hakuna Kulala, with Duma or with other projects that are two African experimental club, more oriented labels, I feel that your music you made before, it wasn't as club friendly as this the adept.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, like the meaning that the former work released before.
Yeah, your former work.
Okay.
It wasn't as club-oriented, despite that those labels were more like club-oriented.
Because with the Adept, we really wanted to, like, you know, push ourselves and really, like, go beyond what we were used to working with, and also, like, you know, curate all this process of curation we did together in the label to find all these artists who are really representing in their niche markets and their niche industries. So for us, it was really, like, you know, assembling this crew of, like, really forward-thinking musicians who are really, like, pushing their art where they are working. And it was cool because it was a whole collaborative, you know, effort. And it went way, way, way far, not just the music itself, because the engineers also, James Ginberg from Empty Set, really came through with the mixing and mastering. It's like surgical on the textures and the tones. Really went a long way to like deliver the music properly. And also, we stayed in studio for months and weeks. And yeah, it was actually a process that happened really nicely, organically, because the album was actually, I was finished like last year in April, but there was a problem because one of the producers I had on the album like took my songs and like put them in another record. I didn't want it to be there. So we had like now like to go back to scratch and make the album again. Like, took 3 months to do that.
Wow.
Yeah, and like hitting up all our people, they were so happy to be involved. They were like, yo, they've been fans of mine already. And like, they were so like, just happy to be involved and get on board and like, you know, just like see this other new direction they will take also themselves. And like, it was very organic. And I reached out to a couple of people, like it was so quick. And like, I already knew what we wanted to get. And like, I always make my music in mind about the live performances and the live shows. So I always keep that aspect in front of my mind, because I'm going to tour and perform these songs like in different countries, so I have to really like this music, because I'm going to play it every night. So I can't like, you know, play something I don't dig. So yeah, so it was totally awesome, like joyful. Yeah, love how it went.
You had to make this. Did you remake the album the same, or did you kind of like change when you?
It changed completely.
Right.
Completely. Yeah, because there was this. It was kind of similar to what I was been doing in the past. Those songs that are not now there, like the producer. He was trying to put them on his album, and then we just had to stop everything from happening, and we scrapped all that. So now it went even more deeper. Now it went another level, and I'm very happy actually that happened.
Was it released? It was like, is it the Drunken Love?
No. Yeah, that's also another issue. That's another whole other drama there. But this was just, we were recording at the time in mind for this album, but the guy kind of like got swayed by another label. They wanted like, so he took those songs. But I told him, yo, if it's not our agreement, so I'm not going to do it like that. And so I had to remove those songs, and also had to now get back to the drawing board and make everything now, like, you know, with a new, fresh outlet. And actually, I'm so happy that happened, because without that, I wouldn't have really, you know, opened up this other, you know, like ceiling, like, yeah, like I did. And like, I'm so happy. Like, it's all worked out like that, for real. Like,
And there's a massive amount of collaborators
in
the
album.
Yeah,
for sure. It's
like a movie. I really like how you call it, like the Bass and Red universe, no? The Bass and Red universe. Like, we have Brodinski, Backwash, Fatboy Sharif, Rudy Shalabah from Senyawa, Sion GBBB. Yeah. I mean,
awesome. Yeah, love it.
Did you know all of these people before?
Some of them, I already knew them before, and somebody like Backwash, we already met at Roadman Festival, already we had been talking about making music together. Yeah, somebody like Brodinski, I'll see me working with Slickback and other friends of mine, and I really like loved his style, you know. In fact, Fatboy Sharif, I found about him later, like for my wife, because she's always getting new music and like listening to what's happening. And like, we found Fatboy Sharif, like it's really like, you know, pushing that experimental raps like from New York, and like, wow, it's just like, clicked immediately like to work with him, you know. And like Saonji was the way out there, like he was like way crazy on the beats, like we just there was no limit to what he could do. Like, I was so amazed, like he just kept me sending me music, and like it was just getting more and more like crazy for me. Like, yeah, I really loved like how he was people like just get an idea and then like really translate it into some sonic, you know, landscape kind of thing. And yeah, so awesome to do that.
Have you ever got a beat too crazy to use, or will you
know. For me, actually, that's the point. Like, I want to see like how far we can go with this.
the thing that unites it all, well, many things, but one thing is your voice. And I was reading that when you started off, you had to learn how to sort of scream, and because you didn't have instruments, so your voice. How do you teach yourself that? Do you just, I mean.
Yeah, I actually it was like I really wanted to be in a rock band or like to do a band, you know, and I didn't have any instruments, so I just like researching a lot about death growls and like, you know, Wikipedia. I was very young, YouTube and everything. I would also like follow these vocalists who are doing it properly and everything, but it was a bit hard because I was using my my vocals, and you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to use your stomach and, like, you know, just like drive it, like, you know, extreme falsetto kind of thing. And like, I will really, like, even lose my voice, like, for 2 days after the first show, way back in the beginning, like 2011 or something, like. So yeah, just, but at some point you just do it a lot, and then it just becomes like muscle memory now, like, just easy now, yeah. But it took some time, a lot of work.
Do you have to practice other than shows? Like, if you've not done a show for a while, do you have to go and, like?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I do, not really like practice, but for me it's like normal day life, because I'm always in studio every day, so I always have like to growl some point, record something, like try something. So yeah, I do, like, yeah, I'm always in studio, so I'm always growling, yeah, I do.
When was the first time you realized that metal was a thing and it was kind of music made for you and you like it?
Oh my God, that was just like after I left high school, because I was listening to rock and roll when I was in high school. So, but and there's always a point you reach, you want something harder, you know, something like it just kind of attracts you more. Mm-hmm. And I saw, like, wow, this is insane. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I saw this particular show. It used to play in Nairobi, this radio station called XFM. This show every Thursday, when I was back then, it was called XFM, Metal to Midnight. So they would play metal every Thursday from 10 o'clock to midnight. And like, I found this band called Suicide Silence there. And like, I couldn't believe, like, this is one person, because you could growl and you could scream at the same time. And then the show was like, because my mom was in church, and she would take me to these crusades. This like pastor, prophet guy talking on stage, like people in the crowd. So like, I saw that happening live. I was like, wow, it was crazy. Mosh pit, the energy, like the dust in the air, like black flips, like with motorcycles, like it was so cool. Like, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it just drew me so much because of the energy. It was so positive. I felt like you couldn't have any negative thoughts in that situation. You just let go, and like, you're in the present moment, like meditating. And like, yeah, that's how, like, I really loved it because of that. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I think it's incredible, because people, when talking about music from Kenya or even from Africa, they think of Afrobeat, Afro jazz, even reggae. Yeah. But metal isn't a genre that people have in mind when talking about the continent.
Yeah.
Is there a scene in Kenya?
Yeah, there's a scene. It's been there for a long time, actually. It's been way before I was born, because some bands from Zambia used to come and record, because Nairobi is the only place they had like proper studios. So bands from Zambia would come to record in Nairobi in the 80s. And I found during this 2000 millennium new metal time, like Linkin Park was blowing up, and Korn and all these bands, like, you know, people were already forming bands in Kenya already. There were already bands like Last Year's Tragedy. There was Murphy's Flow already working. There was Point of Vertigo. There was all this other, the scene was already there before, because Kenya is mostly into, you know, exposure, and people want to see what's happening in the world and like kind of translate it to the local culture and stuff. So when I came out of high school, I already found there were already shows happening and gigs, and like, you know, there was this scene and people would meet this community, and like every month there were shows, every week there were shows, and like it was very encouraging for me to see that happening. Like, there are real life bands and like vocalists and all, everything set up, and like, yeah, that's really, yeah, like, drew me to it, and like, yeah, kind of helped me do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel that it's not only a Kenyan scene, it's an African thing.
Sure. It's everywhere. It's a very big scene in South Africa, and also in North Africa, also in Botswana. It's a whole culture. Like, these bands in Botswana, like, for example, Overthrust, when they played, Overthrust is a death metal band from Botswana. When they played in Wacken in Germany, they came back to Botswana, and the prime minister and the government took them from the airport. Like some national heroes or something, like, yeah, it's cool, because also they find that it's like an export for the country, and like also it draws people's attention to the country, like, you know, for other things like tourism, and, you know, it's a safe space. So yeah, and these scenes are very serious, and people are dedicated to them. Like, it's not a joke. It's like, it's real life, like, it's total, like, culture. It's not cute, you know. It's very like serious, and like,
that's awesome. And talking about Overthrust, in fact, Vulture Thrust.
Yeah, Vulture Thrust is on the album. Yeah, for
and
sure.
It's on the album.
Yes, my G has been my friend for a long time. Shumarello. Yeah, they organized this festival in Ganzi in Botswana called Wintermania Festival, and they call all these bands from South Africa, from West Africa, from, you know, Angola, North Africa, and they come and play there. From all over Africa, and like, yeah, even actually big bands have toured also Africa, like Rammstein, you know, and Maiden, they've come there, down there also, yeah, Parkway Drive, you know. So yeah, it's just gonna keep on growing. Yeah, it's gonna keep getting bigger. Yeah.
And you founded your own record label to support all this extreme music coming from the continent, right? Haikelu Records. Why did you decide to begin your own label with your debut solo.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's something I had wanted to do for a long time, and I actually tried before, like for a couple of years before, and I had failed because I didn't really have the information and the knowledge I did. Like now, like I do right now, and now I have more resources, I have more contacts and more networks. So also, like for me, it's very important for you to have, for us to have this control of our own material, and our music and our art, because you find that most people in the continent, they don't know this like side of the business. They're just mostly recording and jamming. Mm-hmm. They're very good musicians, but there's this other business side of the whole thing that you need to know. And you need to know how, like, how to organize, you know, the vinyl pressing, the distribution, marketing, you know, publishing, all these things, touring. So this information, this knowledge is not available like that there. And like most guys are still doing DIY like that. So for us to have this kind of company involved is very important, because it provides the infrastructure and the system to facilitate these artists to, you know, reach their markets that they're really like on demand for. And since it's not like really organized like that, and it needs to be, since every other industry is like that and they're professionals, so it just makes more sense to, like, you know, have this entity that protects them and also give them information and like a blueprint they can also use in other countries to use if they want to, like, venture into this business, and also to protect them and to give them the information and the resources and the tools to be able to deliver the art to where it's needed. So that's very important, I think. And that's one thing I was struggling a lot back in Kenya when I was doing this music, because there was no backing machine and it was totally blind, you know. But having someone with experience and having all these like professional producers involved to mix and master things, and like these collaborative guys for artistry and the artworks and graphics, you know, it's very important. And also like vinyl pressing, distribution, also touring for their music. So Hekalu is there to, like, you know, have this system there for them, and like also to, so it makes it more sustainable and encourages people, and also to do this thing, like, also inspires them, like, it's possible to make it work, and like, you know, it can last for a long time. Yeah,
this lack of industrial structure, it was the reason you moved to Uganda, to Kampala.
Because I've been in Kenya for a very long time, and the clubs in there wasn't as serious as in Kampala, because Kampala was more, there were more parties, there were more clubs, you know, but in Kenya it's more like, you know, conservative a bit. So, yeah, that happened because also I had started making electronic music, like heavy metal, already in Kenya. And I found like it needed like a club space and an outlet for it. So that's actually why I moved also to Kampala at the time. Because I'd been trying a long time to do this in Kenya, but it was not really taking off. So having the right environment is very important too, like just to like let it go and like to see how it like flows. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned Overthrust getting recognized by the government in Botswana.
Yeah.
You've done a massive job like promoting, well, your music is it's really big, kind of promoting Kenyan culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you had any kind of similar recognition from
Not yet, really. But I would love to be involved in that, like, you know, like a youth ambassador or something, like, for, you know, because I'm very like I travel way more even than the government. So yeah, that'd be cool. For sure, because even like they are friends with my family already. Like they even like did my grandma's state. They got a state funeral. So yeah, I think maybe in the future that something like in the works we could like be very down to do. Yeah,
it's very close.
Yeah.
What do you feel more comfortable in, the club or in the mosh?
Everywhere. Yeah, I do. I feel it everywhere, because for me it's like feeding. For me it's like how I eat food. Like for me it's I feel comfortable in all those settings, because my music is so broad. It can fit in art spaces, can fit in festivals, can fit in clubs. So for me all of them are like the same scenery. That's even how I visualize it. And I just feel so at home, and as long as the music is loud, and we do it.
So there's any extreme band to follow closely from Africa?
A couple.
Can you name them?
Of course, Overthrust, of course, yeah. Also, these guys from Mozambique, Nobomide MD. Yeah, they're so heavy. They're seriously heavy. Also, I follow my homebros, Last Year's Tragedy. They're from Kenya, Nairobi. Yeah, they're doing good stuff also. They're also, I think, playing South Africa soon. Irony Destroyed, also from Nairobi. Also, I follow them a lot. I also follow Middle Ground from South Africa. I also follow Peasant from South Africa also. Yeah, they're very sick too. Yeah, I also follow Scarab from Egypt. Yeah, they're awesome. And guys like Eternal Catastrophe from Angola also, mm-hmm. they're very cool, they're very heavy, very heavy. Also this experimental black and atmospheric death ambient artist from Ethiopia called Nishayar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cool stuff. They do it there, okay, also, yeah. And yeah, some bands I used to follow, but now I'm not really like following them because I think there's some of them split, like this band, they used to do deathcore from South Africa. They were called Bringing a Shark to a Gunfight. Yeah, they were very serious. We were like serious mosh pits everywhere. Yeah, Crowblask, Black Sky, also cool. Yeah, also this is a black metal band from Soweto called Demo Godroth Satanam. Yeah, they're very heavy also, very sick. Yeah, 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 that's the name of you. Sure.
I have a question, and this might be me overthinking things, but I'm going to try anyway. Sure. So you mentioned the connection to your mum and the church. You mentioned, you know, the energy you kind of got from a pastor, I think.
Yeah.
In your name, you're named Lord Spycon. Oh, yeah. Is there any connection there? Like, is making a connection using the word Lord?
Yeah, it is. Because for me, it's like this name they give to, you know, gods on earth. Like, even in Hinduism, like Lord Rama, Lord Krishna. Yeah, for me now, like, I'm in this other spectrum of, like, dark, heavy universe music and, also, you know, I used to read the Bible with my brother when I was small, back to back, so I really loved the book of Revelation, and, like, it's so graphic and, like, it's so intense, that book, so, and the Lord is mentioned so many times in the Bible, so for me, yeah, also not really, like, in the true context of religion, but, like, mostly it's an empowering name, and it just stuck with me, because the scene back in Kenya, the band bros, we used to say we have to do the Lord's work. You know, we have to do this metal and we have to like keep recording and jamming it. Yeah, and doing shows. So it was the Lord's work. So that's how I got the name to Lord Spider, because I just love this music so much. I love everything with it. I love touring. I love making it. And like, so for me, it's my life. I give it to, you know, this art. And yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Mark, you finished your European tour at the end of May.
Yeah.
Will there be more The Adept Life?
Yeah. There will be more Adept Life. We are now organizing more shows. Actually, more of us are also coming in right now. So we'll be checking out. We'll be also here in the fall. We're also doing a few festivals also in August also. So we're seeing if we can enter the UK too. Do like a UK round, yeah, like trip also. Also Australia, we might hit up Australia also. And yeah, I'm just going to keep cranking it out. But I'm already recording the second album already, so.
Oh, right. Yes.
So yeah, I just never stop. Yeah. But I'll still be playing as much as possible.
Will this be the second Hekelo Records release, or will there be any more thing?
Yeah, we are still we're still keeping that under wraps tight, because we are very particular and like selective, and we take our time like to engineer everything. So we are still broadening our options and still working on this at the same time. So we might release another artist, or it might be this one, the second one. So yeah, we just we'll see. Yeah, maybe.
So yeah. Martin, thank you for coming here.
Yeah, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for the
me.
Adept. And,
thank you.
And now for the first time on our stream.
Awesome.
Yeah.
A live act. Lord of Spyheart.
Thank you so much. Yes. Ciao. Thank you.